So welcome, Shkar, for joining us this evening. Apparently, it's not as easy to join as we might have thought. And
me too, bro. That's crazy, bro.
And what we're going to do tonight is we're going to explore a piece in the B'nai Soskar that was my first sort of jump into the B'nai Soskar. The B'nai Soskar is a Hasidic Rebbe, Ratzvi Eli Melech of Dinov. He was a nephew of Rav Eli Melech of Lizhansk, basically like Hasidic royalty. And he was a B'nai Soskar. What was sort of extraordinary and impressive about him was that in addition to being like a conventional Hasidic Rebbe, you know, giving over meaningful mussar and inspirational insights, he was also a halakhist. He was really holding in Chas and Poskim, and a lot of his Divrei Torah sort of use halakha and lumdus in formulating the inspiration that he shares. And so that's really what we're going to see tonight. We're going to see the B'nai Soskar do something that's really lumdishy for almost the entire time, only really until the end. And so I'm very, very excited because it's super gishmak and crazy awesome. And so let's jump in. The question the B'nai Soskar is asking, this is in Chodesh Nisan, Ma'amar Gimel. B'nai Soskar, unlike almost any other sefer I'm familiar with, doesn't comment... Oh, I am not sharing my screen. B'nai Soskar doesn't comment on Parshios. For the most part, as we've probably used to, when Hasidic Rebbeim are writing, they're writing based on Parshios. You know, Sfas Emes is writing on Parshios, and Siva Shalom is writing on Parshios. The Noam HaLemelech, the first Hasidic Sefer, is writing on Parshios. The Balatanya, I guess, which one of the first Hasidic Sefer wasn't on Parshios, but the vast majority of Hasidic works are written based on the Parsha, and yet not so with the B'nai Soskar. He writes on the months of the year. And so we're going to look at what he writes at the third month of the third piece in Chodesh Nisan, and he's going to try and understand what in the world is going on with Shavuos HaGadol. Why do we call it Shavuos HaGadol? So feel free to jump in and share your thoughts at any point in time. For the time being, I can't see you because I'm focused on the screen. So I'm sharing the screen here, and I threw a few letters in just to help us navigate a little bit, but it's all here. And so we said. Yeah?
It's not coming in so clearly.
Ooh, okay. So tell you what, I'm going to stop sharing my screen, and you can all just look at...
Good.
You can all just look at me, and I'll just share it in the chat like I did the other one. Good call.
Rob.
Don't worry about it. It's all good. All right.
Donnie, come on.
I don't know.
Look at this,
Danny, I don't know why you're upset.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to try to understand, why is this Shabbos called Shabbos HaGadol? What in the world makes this Shabbos, the Shabbos before Pesach, Shabbos HaGadol? So before we sort of jump in and start walking through, anyone know why this is called Shabbos HaGadol?
It's a very great Shabbos.
It is a great Shabbos. It's a great Shabbos. You know, it's the Shabbos where all the Yeshiva Brachim are home. You know, it's before Pesach, everyone's together. So it's a big deal. It's a great Shabbos. Maybe there's more to it than that.
Every Shabbos is Shabbos HaGadol, this week it just, we call it Shabbos HaGadol.
Well, why do we call it Shabbos HaGadol? This is funny, because it's, this is one of two Shabbosos where seemingly nothing special is happening. You know, we have Shabbos Zachor and Shabbos Shkalim, where like you take out a separate Sefer. Here there's no special Sefer, there's nothing seemingly ritually different about this Shabbos than any of your other Shabbos. So what makes this Shabbos special? So it's a Shabbos before Pesach. And that doesn't necessarily mean anything. That shouldn't have any impact on Shabbos per se. And so we're going to look at what the B'nai Soskar says. I'm opening up the source sheet. Feel free to open up along. I'm going to read and translate. We said in the very beginning, why is the Shabbos before Pesach called Shabbos HaGadol? Tam lama korin l'Shabbos lifnei Chag HaPesach, Shabbos HaGadol. Hinei kvar dibur bezeh, kol rishon v'achronim, kol shilti ha-giborim, ki yad Hashem ha-tov aleihem, ve'ene gam ha-nichel ki l'kvod ha-toro, l'kvod ha-shabbos, Shabbos kala, v'iz l'chol chevet uptatia d'arais ha-tavin. Basically, there's a flowery way of saying that everyone talks about this. This is a very, very common topic and theme. Everyone has sort of addressed in some way, shape, or form why this is called Shabbos HaGadol. And he's going to say, Yadua, at line A, Asher Chachamim HaRishonim Darshu V'Chakri L'Hotzi HaLaka LaMito, Ve'inyan ha'avos mi'imos Avram shekim ha'torah v'toros nedava. And, oh, you know what? He doesn't mention it. I totally apologize. Okay, before we get into this, the most common response, the most common mahalach that we're going to find for why is it called Shabbos HaGadol is found in the Torah. The Torah is quoting the Tosfos in Shabbos on 86b, I think. And a Tosfos, whatever. It's basically everyone says it. B'nai Yisrael, the Beis. Beis Yosef mentions it on the Torah. The Torah basically says that why is this week called Shabbos HaGadol? Because the year that B'nai Yisrael left Egypt, that year, the 15th of the month, was on Thursday. They left Mitzrayim on Thursday. And so, if the 15th of the month was on Thursday, then so, you know, the night, you know, of the 15th after the 14th, they were eating the Korban Pesach, they were eating, you know, the Paschal Lamb offering, and the Korban Pesach was a sheep, it was a lamb, it was, you know, the Egyptian god. And so, what did they do 4 days beforehand? I think we're all familiar with this story, that they had to tie the sheep up, and the Egyptians said, hey Jews, what are you doing? Why are you tying up our god? And the Jewish response was, oh, we're planning on shechting it and eating it as a celebration to our god, which was a very geschmack, spit in the face to the Egyptians. And seemingly this was sort of like a very, very clear display that the Jewish people were rebelling. They were no longer subservient to their Egyptian taskmasters. They were subservient only to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so the Torah explains that, you know, they needed to check the sheep for 4 days prior. And so if you count back 4 days from the 15th, then you get, or from really the 14th, because they had to check it on the 14th. If you take 14 and subtract it by 4, what do you get, Daniel? 10, exactly. So the 10th of the month, you know, they had to take the 10th of Nisan. And on the 10th of Nisan, that year, if the 15th was on Thursday, then that year, the 10th of the month was going to be on Shabbos. And so this is called Shabbos HaGadol, because this was the Shabbos where B'nai Israel took the sheep, sort of against their Egyptian taskmasters. Okay. Why that makes it a Shabbos HaGadol, a little bit unclear. So that's what we're going to try and figure out. I apologize that B'nai Saskar didn't address it. I thought that he did. All right. Now, let's go back to Ritzvi Elimelech of Dinov. And so, starting at line at A over here, he says, Yadua, there's a Machlokes. Asher Chachamim HaRishonim Darshu V'Chakru L'Hotzi Halakha L'Amito Be'inyan Ha'avos Mimos Avram Shekimu HaTorah B'Toras Nedava Ad Shlo Nisna. We know the Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara in Yuma on 28b says that Avram Avinu kept the entire Torah, kept the Kol Torah Kula. And then it's Machlokes, you know, maybe he just kept Shev Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. No, Avram Avinu kept everything, including Advi Advichlal, Erev Tavshilin, implying that Avram Avinu kept the entire Torah in its entirety. If Avram Avinu walked into one of our Bate Medrash or Bate Knessios today, or not today, Rechman Litzlan, but in general, and then he would fit right in. He would totally understand all the halakhos that we're fulfilling because he kept the Torah the same way that we did. But there's a question that comes up. There's a shaila that presents itself in that case. The shaila that presents itself is basically, plain and simply, if Avraham Avinu is keeping the Torah, and the Medrash says that Yosef Atzadik kept the Torah, and our Avos are keeping the Torah, were our Avos Jewish? And this is a question we're going to, I guess, lay out for the Chevra. Were our Avos Jewish? Was Avraham Avinu Jewish? I'm getting a no from Downey.
Depends what you define by it.
Okay, so let's put it like this. We're not going to say Jewish. We're going to say, was he more of a Ben Noach or was he more of a Ben Torah? This is a real diyun in halakha.
I mean, probably more of a Ben Noach.
Donnie wants to say Ben Noach. Okay.
I mean, he was the first one to see that there was only one God in Sabir of Lazar, but I mean, we know that Yehudi was really like the first time like he called Jews.
Right, so Jew is maybe not the best terminology to use. The moniker Jew seemingly comes from the fact that amid the destruction of the first temple, you know, there was Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda, and Malchus Yisrael were dispersed, the 10 tribes were dispersed, and so you only had Yehuda, and then the Yehudim ended up becoming sort of the only remaining Jews around, and so so Judaism, the Yehudaism became Yiddishkeit Judaism, but so that's why we're not going to necessarily use the term Jew, but instead of Jew, we're going to use the term Ben Torah. But still, you want to argue that Avram is more of a Ben Noach than a Ben Torah. You know, the Torah hasn't been given yet, and he's quite literally a Ben Noach. He was living in a time of idolatry. He himself, as we're going to say next week, was an idolater in his early life, and so he's a Ben Noach. Totally fair. The alternative argument is, okay, fine, so there might not have been Matan Torah yet, but maybe, there was no Matan Torah, and so you don't need to have like a whole elaborate conversion process. You could just be a Ben Noach. You could just be like a Stam guy and then decide that you want to become extraordinary, decide that you want to become, they sort of accept upon yourself all Malchus Shemaim and all Mitzvot and all HaTorah, and so now you're effectively a Ben Torah. There was no means to become a Ben Torah outside of just accepting it upon yourself, and so that's all it takes. You know, we often talk about how there are two qualifications for a guy to convert, but really there are three. The sort of obvious natural two that are external, at least for men, are Bris Mila, or something applicable, if that's already taken place, and to go into the mikveh. But before they dunk in the mikveh, there's supposed to be a Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim, a Kabbalas HaMitzvos. If the goy did not actually accept upon himself mitzvos, he's not really Jewish, which is basically the problem that comes up whenever you have a conversion that from either a rabbi who's not fully observant himself, you know, whether you have a conservative reform conversion, it doesn't, as far as orthodoxy is concerned, you need to accept upon yourself all mitzvos. If you're accepting Reform Judaism, and Reform Judaism says that you can drive on Shabbos when orthodoxy says you can't, then you've not accepted all mitzvos. And so that's why those conversions don't work, and you have to convert again. And so if you have no ability to accept, do the conventional Mamet Har Sinai conversions, and so the only option that you have is to just accept mitzvos, maybe that's good enough, and that's one side of the argument. The other side is no, until the Torah is given, you don't get to call yourself a Jew. You're not a Jew, you're not a Ben Torah, you are something else. You're a good Ben Noach who's keeping all the mitzvos. And so we know that Avram kept the Torah, we know that Yosef kept the Torah, but we know that they were keeping it voluntarily. They seemingly weren't obligated to keep it. And so the question arises in this top line here: Im yatzu michalal b'nei Noach lahakel bein lahach uvein lahachmir. Oh, nemar lav kol kiminayhu lat says michalal b'nei Noach b'dvarim sheyeshan bechumra etzel ben Noach Yosef Yisrael. Achinis na Torah v'nitzkal jehalak lahakel b'dar v'lemakal b'nei Torah. When it comes to machlokas between b'nei Noach and b'nei Torah, when there's a chumrah that exists by a Ben Noach or a Ben Torah, which one do you have to follow? Do you have to follow the approach that we're B'nai Noach or that we're B'nai Torah? Seemingly, it's unclear. We don't know. If you're going to assume that you're a full-fledged Ben Torah, then any time that a leniency exists for B'nai Torah, as opposed to a Ben Noach, you can hold on to it. You can keep it. But unclear if you're able to accomplish that in this context. Something that maybe you've never thought about, never wondered before, but we know that Yosef at Tzadik and his brothers didn't get along so well. Yosef and his brothers fought a lot, and so the B'nai Saskar explains, based on the Parshas Drachim, the Ma'akan Mishnah, why were they fighting? What were they fighting about? And it says it's specifically this machlokes, whether they're B'nai Torah or B'nai Noach, because we know that Yosef brought Dibra Tamara to his father about his brothers. Yosef basically was speaking Lashon Hara, he was tattletaling on his brothers, and so Rashi says, you know, what was he telling them? What was he telling his father? What was he saying about his brothers? And Rashi says, he was that they were picking on the Shvachos. Okay, fine. You know, whatever the legitimacy of that is. But one thing that he says is that the Shvatim were eating Eivir Menachai. Now, there are only seven mitzvot B'nai Noach. Only seven things that B'nai Noach are not allowed to do. And so the Shvatim, as far as they were concerned, said that they were B'nai Torah. And Yosef said, no, we're not B'nai Torah. We've not yet been Mekabel Torah. We're really B'nai Noach. But even so, whether you're Ben Torah or Ben Noach, you're not allowed to eat Eivir Menachai. You can't eat a limb off of a live animal. So what's pshat? How in the world is Yosef telling his father that they're eating Eivir Menachai when you totally can't eat Eivir Menachai? So, explains B'nai Saskar so beautifully. This, I think, is just gevaldic. It's like, it's Lumdish, it's Dion, it's very cool. And so really he's quoting the Parshas Drachim, and he says, Shadever hazeh hayu machlokas kaduma ben Yosef ben Achav shifte Yishurin, ma shehotzias dibartam v'chule, shayu ochlen eber menachah, shayu ochlen mifarkeses. uven pakua asher shkita v'nasar levanoach ad sheyamusu v'yisrael shkutim uteres. But and so what was going on that the Shvatim and Yosef were both shechting sheep. They were both shechting sheep, gavaldik. Yosef, as far as he was concerned, was saying we're b'nei Noach. And so there's a chumrah that exists for goyim that doesn't exist for Jews. When you shecht an animal, with this, you know, people talk about it with chickens, but it exists with, I think, many animals. The animal still has like nerves that haven't quite made it like down to the legs. Once you've severed the head from the rest of the body, to get a little bit graphic. And so when you've made that separation, the animal might literally still be kicking. And so what's the din of the animal while it's still kicking? If you rip a limb off of that animal while it's still cooking, even though it's already been shechted, is that called Eiver Ben Hachai? And the animal's been shechted, so maybe it's dead, but it's still kicking. So for B'nai Torah, if it's been shechted, then that's the green light. You're allowed to start eating the animal. You're allowed to start preparing the animal, ripping the limbs off. But for a non-Jew, because they don't have a mitzvah of shechita, they need the animal to be entirely lifeless. They cannot still be kicking, can't still be a mifracheses, as we say. And so, what was going on? The Shvatim, who said that they are B'nai Torah, and Yosef, who says they're B'nai Noach, were doing differently. Yosef is saying, we got to wait till the animal stops moving, and the Shvatim are saying, no, we can eat it while it's still kicking, we're B'nai Torah, it's not a problem. So Yosef is saying they're being Mekah when they're not supposed to be. They're pretending like they're B'nai Torah when really they're B'nai Noach. What was the gossip? What was the tattletaling that Yosef was bringing to his father? Abba, they're paskening incorrectly. Oh, halavai, that the tattletaling that would go on in our homes, or in Klal Yisrael's homes, would be that brothers are complaining that they're to their father that, oh, my big brother's paskening incorrectly. And so we see we're going to jump now to B, that Vadever Haya Taliv Omi Berifium Ben Aposkim Rishonim. And we see this is even amongst Rishonim. It's still up in the air. Whether our Avos were called B'nai Torah or B'nai Noach. V'yesh Sfaros L'kan L'kan. Klal Shel Davar K'fi Anira Mi Mos HaShvatim Haysa Laka Hazos B'Safik V'lo Ispik Hilkosa Keman. And really, ultimately, they didn't end up paskening one way or the other. And so we don't really know. They didn't know whether they were supposed to be considered B'nai Torah or B'nai Noach. And so, if that's the case that a Ben Torah, that our Avos were not necessarily B'nai Torah, not necessarily B'nai Noach, then there's one significant nafkamina that comes up. What is the biggest, I guess you could say, chumrah that exists by a goy that does not exist for a Jew? What are Jews allowed to do that goyim are not allowed to do?
Keep Shabbos!
Ah. So the goyim are not allowed to keep... Oh, I want to record this. All right. Goyim are not allowed to keep Shabbos, and Jews are allowed to keep Shabbos. So, if Yosef is of the opinion that they're B'nai Noach and not B'nai Torah, then Yosef has a serious problem. As far as he's concerned, he is to break Shabbos on a weekly basis. But for the Shvatim, they're not necessarily concerned that way. And so this comes up in a very, very significant manner. This, on the second column of the B'nai Yisrael, is what we're going to look at. And this is going to be sort of our main point. In the left column where it says C, he says that a Ben Noach Shabbos is going to be Chayav Misa. And so if their din is a Ben Noach, they're going to have to break Shabbos on a weekly basis. We basically just said all of that. Now, this is very cool. I highly recommend that you look inside for this piece. This is D. Because we're in a tight-knit group, even though I'm recording it, this really is just sort of crazy lumdus, pilpul. This I don't think is meant to be taken literally, but very, very cool. Now, let's take a look at the Haggah, at the little asterisk thingy that he's got going on the left column. He says, Ubezeh perashnu mikrai kodesh ne'amarim etzel Yosef. And this is what the Mikra Kodesh, this is what how we can explain something that happens to Yosef. Because remember, Yosef holds that he's a Ben Noach and not a Ben Torah. And so all the chumras that exist for B'nai Torah don't apply to him. And so Yosef and Ashes Potiphar have their little interaction. Vaya, Kayoma Zeva Yavo Baisa Lasos Malakto, Vatis Pesei Bevigdo Lemor Shachva Imi. Ashes Potiphar grabs onto Yosef and says, Yosef, I want you to be Mizana with me. I want even though I'm a married woman. And and Yosef's, and B'nai Saskar continues, Hine, Hadvarim Tzrikim Bir, Echad, Amr Kayom Hazeh. And move on. What do we mean Kayom Hazeh? What's this day? Why does the day that Yosef goes in matter? Havaleh Lamemer, Vayehi, Hayom, Vayevo Yosef. You know, it was that day. What Kayom Hazeh? And the second point we're going to ask on, Vayevo Yosef Abaisa Lasos Malachto. Lamali. Why do I need to know that Yosef was going to do his malacha? So first of all, if you look at the Gemara in Sota, then it implies that the malacha Yosef's going to do is Isurim. But, okay. De ma nafkamina im ba bais alasos malachto o ba stam alabais. Third question we're going to ask. Lemor shachva imi. Havale lemei marva tomer shachva imi. She said, Eishas Potiphar told Yosef, can you sleep with me? But based on what we're explaining, this whole machlokas about Ben Torah, Ben Noach, actually fits in so beautifully, so perfectly. This is so gishmak. Tihine, Hayom Hazeh Yitakin Lefasra al Yom HaShabbos. Hayom Hazeh means it was Shabbos. Today, the day that Yosef goes into H.S. Potiphar was Yom HaShabbat. Great. V'nisna be Moshe Alav, V'yikah Moshe, great. And moving on. Sorry, he's just explaining that whole piece. But Kayom Hazeh means it was Shabbos. Skipping to the next page to D2. On the right side column. It's Aval. Kevin Shalom Amar Shum. Kelo Haya Shum Eka Mancha Abayas. Uva Atma Lasos Malakto. Hivina Ishis Potiphar to Rotel Hachmer Kedin Ben Noach. Ishis Potiphar sees that usually on Shabbos, Yosef didn't do. I wasn't going to be doing any Malacha Mamash. He was going to break Shabbos in some little way, but he noticed there was no one else around. There was no one else who would be able to really break Shabbos in a significant way for him. This sort of implies that if you have to break Shabbos, ideally you don't want to break Shabbos in a full-fledged, you know, Malacha Dick away. You don't want to, like, Mamash light a fire or, you know, write out a whole essay. Instead, you want to figure out a way to break Shabbos in a smaller way. So, seemingly, Yosef would instruct the servants working underneath him to do a malacha. Oh, light that fire. You know, servant person, light that fire. Instead of now Amir Lenachri, as a shlichus, Yosef was breaking Shabbos in a small way. But Ishis Potiphar sees that Yosef is breaking Shabbos mamish, that Yosef had to figure out some way to do malacha, some way to break Shabbos, because he's a Ben Noach, Ben Noach Shabbos Chayav Misa. He can't keep Shabbos. And so what does she do? She grabs him. Tispaseu bevigdo, shahaya mishuna misho. Michelle Kohl, Kabbat Shabbos, and naturally she grabs onto his clothing, which was special clothing because it was Shabbos. Dehine Rasa, Shnei Hafachim, Rasa Shu Shomer Shabbos, Umeshana Begalim, Lachabon Hayom, Verasa also Osa Malachto, Daika, Velo Malacha Sadona, Vahumi Blihekrek. He's doing Malacha for himself and not for his master. He's breaking Shabbos. She sees that today is Shabbos, and Yosef cares enough to break Shabbos. Hine, Hevin Hadavar, it's Alkarkakas, Varaso, to aim Biyadal. So she says, oh, I know what Yosef's thinking. Ladas Yosef, he's a Ben Noach, and he can't be Mako when it comes to Bnei Noach, as opposed to a Ben Torah. Al Kim Behekrik, who Shayasa Ezo Shah Malacha, Mimela, Hayalo Makam Lomar, Shemukhuyev Gam Kane Lasos Mavuksha, Lo Limso Navsha Hadavar, Kim Ben Noach, Enamatsuva Al Kiddush Hashem. And so Ishis Potiphar grabs onto Yosef's beged and says, Yosef, you're mechuyev to sleep with me, because what's going to happen if you don't sleep with me? I'll kill you. And so you're going to argue that, you can't sleep with a married woman, and better to die al kiddush Hashem than sleep with a married woman. But Ishis Potiphar says, no. That's a halakha for a Jew, for a Ben Torah. But Yosef, you don't think you're a Ben Torah, you think you're a Ben Noach. So you have no halakha of giving yourself up to me, rather than being killed. You are obligated, you have no halakha of being killed rather than giving yourself up to me. You're actually mechuyev. You're obligated to sleep with me, because Jews and non-Jews alike have a mitzvah of ushmartim lenashu zekim, that you're not supposed to allow yourself to be killed. But Yosef, you as a Ben Noach, you're mechuyev to not allow yourself to die. So more important, more valuable, more necessary is for you to sleep with me than for you to allow us to kill you, al kiddush Hashem, because you have no mitzvah of kiddush Hashem. Oh, what a gavalika taina from Ishis Potiphar. You never would have imagined that's what was going on. Okay, so is that pshat? I can't imagine that that's pshat. But so cool. Gavalika taina.
Not me.
Oh, fine. Whose birthday is it?
My brother.
You're not singing happy birthday with to your brother?
I called him earlier.
Oh, this is always... Okay, fine. It's not live. It's okay. All right, happy birthday to which brother?
Yeah,
Taco.
Happy birthday, Taco. Okay, I'll reach out to him later. All right, back at the Bnei Saskar. So, where were we? We know that that Yosef and his brothers had this little machlokas. And so now we're going to look into to the source of Shabbos Haggadah a little bit more. Because now we can appreciate and understand that Yosef is of the opinion that they have to break Shabbos on a weekly basis. And even if the Shvatim don't agree with it, actually, before I'm going to unshare. And the Shvatim might disagree. The Shiftei Ka might say, no, we're Bnei Torah, we don't have to break Shabbos. However, then they go down to Mitzrayim. And in Mitzrayim, Yosef is the Rav. Now, this doesn't really exist so much today. Nowadays, it's very important that all of Am Yisrael basically keep the same halacha. But it used to work, not both in times of like Chazal or Shonim for sure, but even, you know, as early as like 150 years ago, when you had like old communities in Europe. If you had a Rav Paskin one way, then that was the Shita, that was the Psak, and that's what you did in your town. What if in a different town they didn't follow that halacha? That's fine, because the Rav was only the Rav in this town. And so you would have examples of people keeping totally different halakos based on the different Psak and different Masoras that existed in each town. And someone commented to me once that the city of Worms, which was around for 1,000 years when it was destroyed during the Holocaust. There was Jewish tradition there for 1,000 years. There were probably Minhagim and Worms that we just don't know about, that didn't exist anymore, that were around for a millennium. But a more like fun application is that a problem came up when, you know, this melting pot of America came up, and you had you know, I guess we'll call them Yeshivish Jews, you had at Lithuanian Litvaks coming to the United States, and you had Hasidim coming, and you had Hasidim from Hungary who paskin lehalacha that Rabbeinu Tam's manim were the Iker's manim. Just like we paskin that, like, we follow the Gra and the Baal Tanya instead of the Magen Avraham, so we can wake up later and daven later. Well, so Daniel can wake up later and daven later. So too, we paskin that Shkia, that Nates and Shkia are whatever times they are. I guess, you know, when we think about Motzei Shabbos, that Shkia is 48 minutes after sunset. But when we talk about Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Tam's us. Rabbeinu Tam's 72 minutes after sunset. So the halacha, Rabbeinu Tam's Ashita is not, oh, you should keep Shabbos longer. You should start Shabbos, you know, at sunset and keep Shabbos 72 minutes extra. He said, no, Shabbos starts later. Sunset is later. The Shita of Rabbeinu Tam is just that the day, when we calculate the day, is a little bit longer than the, I guess we'll say, the normative opinion that we're used to today. So what you had in the beginning of the 1900s were Hasidim who were in the United States who were driving around when it was already dark on Friday night, because let's ask them, it wasn't Shabbos yet. And that was totally appropriate, totally okay, because they were following the Psak of Rabbeinu Tam. And that's the Masorah that they had. So that wasn't working well, and you couldn't have such disparity in the Jewish community. The way I heard it, I think Rav Moshe made like a deal with the Hasidim that they would stop doing that, and I don't remember what they got instead, but whatever, there was some agreement. And so, but the idea here is that you could have a community where, even though they disagree, you have to hold of the psak of that Rav. And so when Am Yisrael go down to Egypt, when they go down to Mitzrayim, who's the Rav of Mitzrayim? Yosef. And so now you have to hold according to the Shita of Yosef at Tzadik, and Yosef says, we are Bnei Noach. And so, understanding that Am Yisrael is paskening that they're Bnei Noach, now something significant happens. Am Yisrael, as Bnei Noach, have to break Shabbos on a weekly basis because they're Bnei Noach. And so, you know, it was one thing when Yosef and his family was doing it. It's one thing when 70 of the Bnei Yaakov were doing it. But now you've got an entire nation of 600,000 men, 2-3 million people who all paskin like Yosef. So on a weekly basis, they have to break Shabbos. And now let's look in E. V'hine. V'yom ha-Shabbos hazel ba'es tse'enim b'trayim haya yom es ha-Lachodesh. It was the 10th of the month. It was Shabbos. And tziva Hashem Yisparach likach bo ba'yom es ha-Karban Pesach. And they had to take the lamb for Karban Pesach. Tzpesach b'trayim haya mikhu mi ba'esor v'hine ne'emar. And the Pasuk says, this is significant. Pasuk says, mishku u'chu lachem tzon. You should pull, and you should take, acquire for yourselves, sells a sheep. And he's going to explain this to us. Fihine. Tiktuk mishku uku. You got to be very clear on what mishku uku actually means. Gama yora tevas lachem. And what does lachem mean? Perish arava kodesh l'chida. L'chida explains. Huh?
What passing is
this in? This is in Shmos Yud Beis Chaf Aleph. And Moshe tells the Canaan that you should tell Am Yisrael they have to take the sheep. Mishku uku. And so, should we explain outside or just read inside and explain as we go?
Read inside.
You want to give it inside?
We'll do it inside. Okay.
You don't have it inside. You didn't share it yet, buddy.
Oh, my apologies. My bad.
You're welcome.
Oh, okay. We're back, and we're about here. So, we say, based on the Chidah, he explains, based on the Machane Ephraim, that the Knios Adam Chavitz Lemitzvah Daraisa could go and Kona Estrog Lemitzvah. What?
Donnie, be her thing.
Yeah, Donnie, we covered you. I'm going to mute you. Yeah, great. Feel free to unmute yourself whenever you need to. But Daniel gets easily distracted. I get easily distracted. Okay, no more picking on Rabbi Friedman. Dibeknias Adam Chavitz Lemitzvah Daraisa could go in Kona Estrog Lemitzvah. Ain't no Kona b'Mishicha Levad. To Knia Midurabanan. It's our Klitain Kesef to have a Knia Midaraisa. If you want to acquire something in a Geshmak way, you want to make sure that you own it, then you need a double Kinyan. Conventional Kinyanim are either through Mishicha or Tiltul. If it's a large object, you'll just pull it. If it's a small object, you can pick it up. So if I want to acquire this bottle of water, then I'll pick it up and say, oh, now I own this. That's what we would be doing on a conventional year. You know, we make the Kinyan for Mechuyas Kameitz, you know, at a wedding, you'll lift the pen up, you're not really acquiring the pen, that's a whole Chalipin thing, but the idea is that you lift something up. That we're going to call Meshicha, that you're pulling it, that you're moving it in some way, showing that you have ownership of it. And the other option is Kicha. And what does Kicha mean? Kicha Mistei Afron, pretty much everyone has learned the first daf of Kiddushin. Kicha means money, that if you want to acquire something, the best way to acquire it is not just to lift it up, but to give money as well. And so, while midrabanan to acquire something, you could either give money or lift it, or move it. And you can either do kicha or mishicha. Midereisa, if you want to acquire something, you should do it in a full-fledged sense. You should do both. And so, the chida explains: to hu adin bekesef below mishicha gam kein lo kana lemitzvah. If you have one and you don't have the other one, you're not really acquiring it for the full sense for a mitzvah. De kevan de tiknerabanan the kesef lo kana. Because Rabbanan can basically decide, you know, this money doesn't apply anymore, hefker based in hefker. Imkein tarvayu ba'inan kesef u'mashicha liknos a mitzvah. So in order to acquire a mitzvah object, you need both. Mzeh perisha kasuv mishku uchu. And so when we say mishku uchu, we're saying, lachem, you're supposed to own it, you should both pull it, you should physically move it, and you should take it with mamon. We'll leave it at that and jump now to letter F on the second column. Vihine. This is where it gets geshmak. Ready? V'hine, b'knias agoy, yesh machlokes, ben Rashi l'Rabbeinu Tam. Ah, gavaldik, Rashi and the grandson argued against one another. Rabbeinu Tam is telling Rashi that he's wrong. Rashi, zikrono l'vracha, sfirulei, dekona b'malos, v'lo b'mashicha. No, what's the ikker kinyan? What's the best way to acquire something? With money. Great. Rabbeinu Tam, sfirulei, mashicha kona v'lo malos. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, you got to move it. That's the best way to acquire something. Alkein, paskina b'shulchan aruch, Dimisfeka Avdina Latarvayu. Out of Suffolk, we do both. Lenyan liftor mina bakor, if you want to, you know, make sure that you don't no longer own this bakor, this animal. I don't know, so you don't have to, it doesn't become hektish, that's a whole limud in and of itself. Aval zevada dimidina beben noach rak nia achas kona okes of a mashicha. And so we have this practice when I want to make sure that I do or don't own something, and I'm interacting with a guy, I will have this double kinyan, both monetary and moving it. Kicha and mishicha. But he's saying that only applies to a goy. Because v'hine, leka sveka kamei shmaya. A Kadosh Baruch Hu knows. When we damar Moshe al pi Hashem yisparach, mishku kulachem chem ditarvayu ba'inan. And so Kadosh Baruch Hu knows that between a Jew and another Jew, you could just have one. Midar abundance is a good enough kinyan and not a problem. And so if I want to get something from Dani, Dani wants to get something from me, I can just give him money and not have the object, or I can take the object and not yet give him money, and it's totally cool, it's totally okay. However, for a non-Jew, when we're talking with B'nai Noach, then we want both. And so Moshe Rabbeinu tells Am Yisrael, Mishku ukhu lachem, that you need both, Mishika and Kicha. Al krakaka, lomar, deshuv, ein lahem din B'nai Noach, v'dinam ki Yisrael mamish. And so now when Moshe Rabbeinu tells Am Yisrael that you need to acquire this sheep, but not just that you need to acquire the sheep, you need to acquire the sheep with a double kinyan, with both actions of moving it and of using money. What he's saying is not just you need the sheep, but boys and girls, gentlemen and ladies, you are now B'nai Torah. You're no longer B'nai Noach. The Kevan, the Kevan Shiyatsu Michal B'nai Noach, Hayurashayin Lishmor Vilishbos is Kol Yom HaShabbos Kimitzvaso. And now, for the very first time in history, really, Am Yisrael can keep the Torah. Am Yisrael are B'nai Torah. They've been accepted into Ol Malchus Shemayim, Ol HaMitzvos, and so they can really keep Shabbos for the very, very first time. Yes, they were keeping Shabbos long ago, and Shabbos has been kept in some way, shape, or form in the past, but never on such a large scale. Never has all of Am Yisrael been able to keep Shabbos. Donnie, I'm trying to unmute you, but it's not working.
if they have to use both, isn't that saying though that why is that showing that they're Torah?
Because if B'nai Yisrael, if the Hebrews, while in Egypt, are still a din of a Ben Noach, then to acquire something from a Ben Noach to a Ben Noach, you'll need one. Acquire something a Jew to a Ben Noach, you need two. And there's also like a little, unfortunately, like a sociological piece of it. You want the Kenyan to be as clear as possible, and no one can fudge it up. And so Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them, you no longer just need a single Kenyan. You're no longer on the same plane, the same playing field as the Mitzrim, as non-Jews. You're no longer B'nai Noach, you're B'nai Torah. And so we'll just finish it up, and then we'll elaborate a little bit more. V'kevan sheyatzu michal b'nei Noach rashaim lishmor v'lishbos es kol yom haShabbos k'mitzvaso v'shuv lo haya tzrikin lasos eiz melacha v'shum sha miso sai.
Okay, sorry.
And now they're finally able to keep Shabbos. They don't have to break Shabbos in any way, shape, or form. Lo haya kayom haShabbos hazeh Shabbos hagadol lefanav ki ad ata lo haya lahem be'efshari lishbos kol chaf dalad really chaf hey. Shavos, HaShabbos, Chav, Vav, depending on how long, whether or not your minion says V'yitin Lecha. They were never able to keep all 24, 25, 26 hours of Shabbos. Mimele, Roy, V'nakul, Likro, Shabbos, Hazeh, Shabbos, HaGadol. Oh, Givaldic. How can you not call the Shabbos HaGadol? This is the biggest Shabbos that's ever happened. Am Yisrael's never kept Shabbos before. This is the very, very, very first time that we're able to keep Shabbos. That's the B'nai Saskar. I'll elaborate for a few more minutes, but let's just let the B'nai Saskar say it.
That was fire.
It's Givaldic.
That was fire.
We started out and we explained that there was a machlokas between Yosef and his brothers, that whether they're B'nai Torah or B'nai Noach, the brothers said we're B'nai Torah, Yosef said we're B'nai Noach, and that's why they were fighting. That's why Yosef said they were eating Ephraim and Achai, because for Yosef as a Ben Noach, Ephraim and Achai, still kicking animals is usher, but for a Ben Torah, once it's been shechted, there's no issue. And that the real big ramification of being a Ben Torah versus a Ben Noach is not a kicking animal, but it's keeping Shabbos. And a non-Jew has to break Shabbos on a weekly basis. Oh, I didn't tell you the joke. I'll tell you the joke later. It's not that good of a joke.
I think it's funny. I laughed anyways to make him feel good on himself.
Great. I'll tell you the joke later. It's not good enough to interrupt that in our wrap-up. And so you have to break Shabbos on a weekly basis. And so for all of Am Yisrael, because they were passing like Yosef once they got to Mitzrayim, on a weekly basis they were breaking Shabbos. No one in Am Yisrael had ever kept Shabbos. There was never a Shabbos that was entirely kept because they had to break Shabbos. Just a little bit to some extent. And so finally, when Moshe Rabbeinu from a Kodesh Baruch Hu tells Am Yisrael that you need this double kinyan, both a kicha, a monetary acquisition, and a mashicha, and moving the object in some way, shape, or form, that double kinyan indicating that you're not in the plane of Ben Noach, but you're now a Ben Yisrael, because if a Jew is acquiring from a goy, you need that double kinyan. Now Moshe is telling them, Am Yisrael, you're finally B'nai Torah, you can finally keep Shabbos in its entirety, and now Am Yisrael, for the very, very first time, keeps the greatest Shabbos, the biggest Shabbos, the first Shabbos, Shabbos HaGadol. Yes, Daniel, you're muted.
Wasn't their fault that they desolated Shabbos, or was Mitzrayim made up workout shops also.
So
was it really followed?
So in our little interruption about Yosef and Ishes Potifar, which I didn't review because we don't need to review that, but skishmak, it differentiates between Yosef doing malach toh, his own malacha, and the malacha of Potifar. If you're forced to break Shabbos because your master says so, that's one thing. But if you voluntarily break Shabbos, seemingly that's what B'nai Israel were doing. Even though their Egyptian taskmasters might have forced it upon them, they were also breaking Shabbos of their own volition to a little small extent. So there's lumdus that we could get into if we want. We're already at 8:44, and so we can wrap it up in the next couple minutes. I'll just sort of give you food for thought. Or I can get into a little bit of the lumdus about what happens when you have a chatzi chatzi. Donnie.
Do we know what happened before, like what happened to make them in a Torah, or just like they're leaving the shrines, therefore?
Okay, so, yeah, I didn't clarify that enough. Seemingly, the reason why they were not B'nai Torah, why Avraham, Yitzchak, and the Shvatim were not considered B'nai Torah, or might not have been considered B'nai Torah, was because they were voluntarily doing it. They were never commanded. In order to become a Ben Torah, you need to be given a mitzvah to... A halakha. Some sort of commandment, some sort of indication that you are connected to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. To be called a Ben Torah, there has to be some connection between you and God. And if God never asked you to do this, there's not really that connection. But as soon as B'nai Yisrael get a mitzvah, once the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives them the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, now they've got not the Torah in its entirety. They get Shabbos a little bit later on. They get Kivud Avim, Paraduma, but they've gotten some mitzvah. And so there's a piece of Torah that has been given to them. So now when they're voluntarily keeping the rest of it, they at least have some context for the relationship. Make sense? Kavaldi. All right. We'll do a little bit of lumdus before I give you the musser. Lumdus is what happens if you are if you're in this Ben Noach situation. Let's say you are a convert. If you're a convert, then you want to keep the Torah to the best of your ability. You basically pretend like you're Jewish. You keep all Torah mitzvos, but you have to break Shabbos on a weekly basis in some way. And so, I have a friend named Nolan. Nolan is a wonderful young man. His name is Nolan Edmondson. He went to St. Francis Catholic School. He's not quite as white as we are. He's actually quite black. And he converted to Judaism when he was 18. And so he went through this whole process. He was like the student council president when he was in YU. It was great. I think YU really appreciated having a black president. That was probably very, very cool. And he's well deserving of it. He's the man. I think he had the biggest wind differential in votes of like anyone in YU election history. He got like an absurdly high number. Anyway, Nolan was staying at our house leading up to his conversion. You know, he was still like 16 or 17 before he was able to convert. And there was one Shabbos. My mom wasn't around. My sister wasn't around. It was a boy Shabbos. All of our food was naturally brown. And we were in a situation because boys, we forgot to take out ice before Shabbos and we couldn't figure out how to. It was a new refrigerator, a new freezer, and the light would have turned on. And so we just didn't have ice. Like, oh, boys, you can manage without ice. It's fine. And so Nolan's like, how come there's no ice? I'm like, the fridge, the freezer, the light would turn on. We can't get ice. And so Nolan goes over to open the fridge door. And I'm like, Nolan, you can't do that. And he goes, actually, I can. I kind of have to. This is going to be my malacha for the Shabbos. So on a weekly basis, you got to break Shabbos. Now, for the Gushmak Lumdus, ready? What happens if Nolan or anyone who's converting does the Mila, they do the Bris Mila, but they didn't have a chance to be Tovel in the Mikvah. They didn't have a chance to do the second half. So you're kind of Jewish because you have a Bris Mila, but you're not fully Jewish per se because you don't have, because you didn't go into the Mikvah. And so if you only have half of a conversion, are you Jewish or you're not Jewish? Are you a Ben Torah or are you Ben Noach?
Not Jewish.
So maybe it depends if you're a Mekabel Mitzvos, but even if you're a Mekabel Mitzvos, if you don't go to the mikvah, you're not Jewish. Just like a woman who goes through the whole process but doesn't go to the mikvah, she's still a Nida. You have to go into the mikvah. You have to be reborn. That's sort of the ta'am behind going into water. It's like being reborn. And so if you have what we call a Mal Velo Tavo, then what does this guy do on Shabbos? Can he keep Shabbos? Can he not keep Shabbos? Now, like Donnie said, he was Mekabel Ol Mitzvos. He has a Bris Mila. Maybe he's Jewish. And so you can't tell him, okay, you know what, just keep Shabbos and don't worry about it, because he might not be able to. He might not be allowed to. he might be a Ben Noach Shavas, and then he'd be Chayav Nisa. And so this question came to Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, the Binyan Sion. And the Binyan Sion, he was the Rav of Rav Shamash Rav Falah Hirsch. I was the Rav in Germany. And Binyan Sion gave this, the following advice. He said, okay, here's what you do. This is Geshmak. He says, put on a four-corner garment, put on tzitzis, with the tzitzis strings on it, and go from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim. Now, why does that help? How does that matter? Because if you're Jewish... That's true. That's true. That's true. But not quite. It's okay. It's okay. It reminds me of all the mitzvot. It was a Kabbalah of mitzvot. It's beautiful. We're still in the Hasidic world. I hear it, Daniel. What he explains is that if you're Jewish, then you're wearing begadim. That, we don't count our tzitzis as carrying. It's part of our clothing. And so whether you walk, in Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Hashanah or Carmelis, doesn't make a difference. You're all good. You're all fine. You can walk around outside wearing your tzitzis. But what if you're not Jewish? What if you're a guy? Then there's no mitzvah of tzitzis for you, right? So you might still wear tzitzis, but there's no mitzvah per se. And so if there's no mitzvah to wear tzitzis, then those strings that are hanging off your shirt, off the corners of your shirt, you're effectively carrying them. And so when you walk from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, or seemingly even Rosh Hashanah to a Carmelis, with a Carmelis that doesn't have an Erev around it, when you go from one domain to another, then you're carrying the tzitzis strings, because there's no mitzvah to wear them. And so if you're a goy, you've now broken Shabbos, you've carried from one domain to another, you've done Hotzah. If you're a Jew, though, you haven't done anything. You're just wearing tzitzis. So in that way, you can break Shabbos without actually having to break Shabbos. Geshmak lamdus. Very, very cool. All right, I'll tell you the joke and then a little bit of a, not musar, but a makshava to sort of end with. The joke, this is just an important joke for you to know in your life. Kayadua, there are many people who don't hold of Erevin. And unfortunately, when it comes to Jews, Rabbi Phil Karish says that this is how Jews tell jokes. Like, all right, there are three things you need to know before I tell you this joke. So, I told you one thing. So, there are two guys, Chavrusos, Baruch Hashem, every single Shabbos, they learn together. Diane knows where I'm going with this, that's okay. Two Chavrusos, they learn together every Shabbos. They're best friends, their families are best friends, their kids are all the same age, it's perfect. And so you've got Steve, and we're not going to say Steve, because we know Steve. And so we've got good Jewish men, but they're not named Stephen and Daniel. That was my example on a previous year. They're named, we'll say, Judah Judah and Israel. And Judah and Israel, they're best friends, they're chavrusas. And Israel approaches Judah and says, Judah, my best friend, my dear friend, I want you to be an aide. I want you to be a witness at my daughter's wedding. And Judah says, oh, that's so kind of you, so sweet of you. I really appreciate it. I can't do it, though. Why not? I can't do it. And this goes on back and forth. Please be an aide at my daughter's wedding. We're so close. No, I can't do it. I can't be a witness. And so finally, it's a week before the wedding. And Judah says to Israel, and Israel says to Judah, whatever. My friend, please, please, please be an aide at my daughter's wedding. And he says, I can't do it. He says, why not? You got to tell me. At least tell me why not. And he says, I'm not Jewish. What do you mean you're not Jewish? How can you not be Jewish? He says, I'm not Jewish. Like, your kids, my wife's Jewish. My kids are Jewish. Don't worry. And don't worry about, like, Bishul Akram or any of those things. Like, my wife takes care of all of it. All of the chumras that exist, we've learned together for a long time. I know all the chumras. I know all the halakos. Don't worry about it. Right? I'm not Jewish, but you don't have to be concerned. And so his friend's looking at him, and he's saying, okay, fine. So you're going to tell me, we learned through Chulin, we learned the halakos of Yerodea. We know, and we learned Masechus Avodah Zarah. I don't have to worry about you cooking things. I don't have to worry about Yain Nesek. I don't have to worry about any of those things. I got one problem, though. You and I have literally spent Shabbosos together the entire time. We didn't separate for a moment. And I've never seen you break Shabbos. You keep Shabbos every week. And we know, Sanhedrin, Goshe Shabbos Chayav Misa. And so his friend says, oh, don't worry about it. It's fine. I break Shabbos on a weekly basis. What do you mean? I've never seen you break Shabbos. He says, you never saw it. But every week, every Shabbos, I walk around with my key in my pocket. And he's like, we have an Erev in our town. He says, come on, you think I hold the Eruv? All right, you know what? That took a little too long. I didn't punch it well enough. Thank you. Okay. All right, here's what we're going to end. Maybe out of the recording, I'll delete that part. I didn't punch it well enough. That's okay. Thank you for your laughter.
Rob, that was a funny joke, bro.
It's a Gavaldic joke.
Funny. Hilarious. hysterical. Bro, it's the funniest joke you ever told in your life, by the way.
That's probably true. I'm muting Danielle now forever. We talked about the Jewish people finally being able to keep Shabbos for the very first time. And you know, when that moment came, it was so exciting, it was so great, because they had not been able to do it. We, Baruch Hashem, keep Shabbos on a weekly basis. Breaking Shabbos is not something that comes up for us. Unfortunately, now it's coming up a little bit. It's coming up to some extent in and around the whole Zoom Seder thing. But generally, we get to keep Shabbos without any issue, without any worry. And so, one, just an appreciation that we get to keep Shabbos. But I think, you know, in this sort of time period that we're in, we're sort of forced into a Shabbos. We're sort of forced to stay into our homes. We're not going out per se. We're staying inside. Shabbos is really an internal experience. And we said, you don't go outside on Shabbos. And so just like Shabbos is sort of that internal experience where we don't leave, where we stay focused on what's going on inside us and inside our homes, this coronation, this, you know, this COVID-19 time period that we're in, it's not about exploring the outside world. It's about exploring internally. There's a fascinating, there's an obscure agadatim, Sekhas Tainis, that I've been telling people, that when Adam HaRishon was first created, he spanned the entire world. And so Yesh Omrim, that what does it mean that Adam HaRishon spanned the entire world? He spanned left to right, east to west, from one side of the globe to the other. The other opinion is that he didn't span east-west, north-south. He spanned from Aretz all the way to Shemayim. You know, he was super, super crazy tall. And Rav Soloveitchik says that you can never learn an Agadata and say, oh, that's a crazy Agadata. We don't have to worry about it. You have to always explain Agadatas, or people are going to think that Chazal just made things up. And so what is that Chazal teaching us? I saw from Rabbi Yisachar Frand in his Parsha book, Frand of the Parsha 3. I was spending Shabbos with one of my rebbeim in yeshiva, and he's like, "You got to have a Torah on Shabbos." And like, it was like one of these early Shana Aleph things. That was like Rabbi Donnie Bader, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I didn't realize I needed a Torah. Like, I wasn't used to this kind of thing." And so I like found a parsha book, and I found a Torah, and Baruch Hashem gave it to Torah. So the Torah in it, he says that the Kohen Gadol had a halacha. Kohen Gadol basically was not allowed to leave the Beis Hamikdash. For sure, wasn't allowed to leave Yerushalayim. The Kohen Gadol was not mamish, but kind of trapped in the Beis Hamikdash. And so, and as many of us are familiar now, you go stir crazy when you're stuck in one place. So the Beis Hamikdash had a lot more space than, you know, my apartment does, but push comes to shove, he couldn't travel. And so why did the Kohen Gadol ever run away? Why didn't he go crazy? Explains to my friend that this Gemara in Tainus, this mashal of Adam HaRishon, because Adam, the people, are naturally going to want to either span the world left to right, you know, east to west. They're going to want to travel. They're going to want to go to this city and that city and see everything. Or maybe they're not going to want to travel east to west. They're going to want to travel up. They're going to want to travel from the Aretz all the way to Shemayim. The Kohen Gadol was not worried about going to see the Himalayas, and he wasn't worried about seeing the Northern Lights. The Kohen Gadol was worried about getting as close to Shemayim as he possibly could. He wanted to span from the Aretz all the way to Shemayim. And so during this time period where we're sort of restricted from spanning the world, you know, east to west, where we're not able to go visit all these places, where we're forced to be inside, we're forced into like a restful Shabbos to some extent, I think it's an opportunity for us to explore internally, for us to sort of try and go from the Aretz all the way to Shemayim and fulfill that Maamar Chazal of Adam HaRishon. With that, we'll call it a night. Thank you for your psing. And it's been a pleasure learning together. I'd be happy.